7415 WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA.
When some of my ham friends and I get together for an evening of dinner and conversation, we often comment that even if any of us haven't attended a ham fest for, say, 20 years or so, we'll still find the same exact people trying to hawk their wares. And we firmly believe that much of that junk on their tables is the same exact stuff that we saw back when we were kids. Now, don't go and get your juices all soured up now about these comments. It's true, and you know it, if you've been around a while. And isn't it amazing how hamfests bring out some of the more, let's say, unusual of our fraternity?
Celebrating over 16 years of service to the amateur radio community, you have found This Week in Amateur Radio International. This is your weekly amateur radio and technology news magazine of the air. This is edition number 226, with a release and air date of Sunday, May 24th, 2009. And now we go to the floor of the Hara Arena in Dayton, Ohio, and our very own Scott Westerman, W9WSW.
Welcome to the 2009 Hamvention edition of This Week in Amateur Radio, North America's premier source for amateur radio news and information. I'm Scott Westerman, W9WSW, reporting from the Hara Arena in Dayton, Ohio. Every year at this time, hams from around the world return to this very spot to study radio products, old and new, to hear from experts about the state of the hobby, and perhaps most of all, to rekindle the fellowship that is the foundation of our love for all that is amateur radio. We brought our microphones to this largest gathering of radio amateurs to focus on two of the newer products that purport to supercharge our contest scores, add to our DX country count, and take the hobby even deeper into the digital world. We'll talk with Jerry Youngblood, K5SDR, the inventor of the Flex Radio, and learn how software-defined devices are revolutionizing amateur radio. We'll visit Eric Meth, VE3EI, from ICOM, to get a lesson in digital smart technologies for amateur radio, D-STAR for short. And we'll talk with ARRL youth editor Duncan McLachlan about what it will take to excite the next generation about amateur radio. That's all ahead as the 2009 Hamvention edition of This Week in Amateur Radio takes to the air right now. We've all done it, connected our computers to TNCs and to the audio outputs of our rigs to watch the PSK-31 railroad tracks and dig deep into the noise for the unique audio signatures of Olivia and the other digital modes. Some of us have even tried software programs like Ham Radio Deluxe, which we hook up by special connection to data ports on our rigs to scan the beacons and translate frequencies from our keyboards to the digital displays on our radios. Computers and amateur radio go together like bees and honey, and it was only a matter of time before someone thought to leverage the concept of radio as a modem device, letting the power of today's computer microprocessors do the heavy lifting. Here in Dayton, one of the vendors that got the most traffic during the 2009 Hamvention was Flex Radio Systems, and Gerald Youngblood is the owner and visionary behind this groundbreaking new brand. Jerry, how did you come up with the idea for the Flex?
Well, it was actually a hobby project that accidentally turned into a business. I had been in the technology industry all my career on the business side, but I got into ham radio when I was a teenager, and that got me into electrical engineering, and then I got into starting high-tech computer-type software companies, hardware companies through my career, and I always loved the technology but didn't get to work on it. My engineers wouldn't let me work on it. They said, "You're not an engineer." So in the late 90s, I got reinterested in ham radio after being out for about 25 years when my son wanted to get a license. And so PSK-31 came along about that time, and I plugged the radio into the sound card, and all of a sudden my first contact was in the Ukraine, and I couldn't hear the station. And I actually made a contact, and I said, "That's really cool. I remember some theory I had in my senior year of college about in-phase and quadrature signals and phasing-type receivers and transmitters, and I'd actually owned a Central Electronics 20A phasing exciter. So I remembered the technology, and I said, I and Q, left and right channels on a stereo audio card, I bet I could build a radio around a PC." That was where it started. And it, go ahead.
So for those that don't know what a flex radio is, describe it.
Okay, a flex radio is a software-defined radio. What I mean by that is the software is the radio. Now, you still have to have hardware because you have to take the signal out of the ether, out of the air, and get it down to something that the PC can deal with. So what we do is we take the signal and directly convert it from RF to effectively audio or baseband, and that, where it can go into a high-performance A to D converter, like a sound card. But we don't use sound cards anymore. The original one did. And so once it goes into the computer, a sound card is an A to D converter, analog to digital converter, and we embed those now in the radios. So once we get it in the computer, we can do magical things. We can do extremely high-performance brick wall filters that look like the side of a wall, literally. You can tune a few hertz and the signals disappear. So once we get in the computer, we can do all kinds of things that you can't do in the analog world. Analog components are not exactly equal, and they drift with temperature. Well, digital doesn't drift with temperature. It doesn't change in manufacturing. So we can do very precise mathematics on the signals. And it's the same mathematics that I learned back in college. And believe it or not, it's the Pythagorean theorem, which was invented, I think it was B.C. You know, it goes way back. It's the Pythagorean theorem is the core mathematics of digital signal processing. And so we're able to do that very precisely in a computer.
And on the software side, it's a radio that's constantly evolving.
Exactly. And one of the key philosophies was using a PC to do that processing. You see DSP radios. They were around when I started on the project. But DSP radios tend to put a dedicated proprietary processor in the radio that never changes. It never gets any better than the day it was purchased. What we do is we use a PC, and Moore's Law says that the number of transistors on these processor chips doubles every 2 years. And so the processor that the original Flex Radio was developed on had about 500,000 transistors on it. The processors today have 2 billion transistors in them. And they can run the original radios that were, the original Flex Radios can run on these 2 billion transistor processors. What that means is we can throw more and more magical software on these radios that you couldn't do the day they were built on the production line. So the PC runs all of the signal processing, all of the control, everything runs on the PC. So you can think of the radio kind of like a modem that plugs into the PC. It's a radio modem that plugs into the PC. And the PC does all the heavy lifting. So they get faster, and that what that means is we've done this in open source software. It's the first time this has been done in amateur radio. So all the signal processing, all the control, everything is an open source general public license. Not freeware, but open. And so what we do is a customer can buy the radio, and they can use our official software, which is fixed and doesn't change, and it's documented. Or they can go play in the sandbox with the developers. They can either develop if they want to, or they can play with the latest toys that the developers have come out with. Like last week, we added true synchronous diversity reception. What I mean by that, the two receivers in the Flex 5000, one can be on a vertical, let's say you had 280-meter verticals spaced, have a wavelength apart or something like that. You got a big lot. I can put one of them on one receiver and the other on the other, and I had, one of our customers did this, and he completely eliminated a 50 over S9 broadcast station. He can turn that station on and off, still listening to all the signals around it. He can completely notch it out of the
so it's
band.
A voting receiver, in essence.
Yeah, exactly. And you can tune it so that you can peak or notch. Now, that software, customers have been buying the second receiver for a year. We added this software. They download it. Suddenly, they can notch or peak signals by just tuning a software knob. If you think about having a 160-meter rotatable beam and rotatable in fractional increments, you could do that with software. You can't do that very easily with
What do you need beside the radio to get going with Flex?
Really, you only need the radio and a PC. With a with a firewire connection. And then on the highest end units, the 5000C, the PC is actually built in the box. So in that case, all you need is a monitor.
What's on the horizon? Are we going to see VHF and UHF incorporated in the Flex radio?
You certainly will. And let me also say that we just introduced the Flex 3000, which is the briefcase, 100-watt briefcase radio. Fits with a laptop under your seat. And then we're coming out with the Flex VU internal VHF, UHF, full duplex inside that will drop into an existing 5000. And what that gives you is the capability of having up to 60 watts on 70 centimeters and 2 meters inside the 5000. So inside a high-performance radio, you can have high-performance VHF, UHF. The radio, the VHF and UHF are locked to the main oscillator. So it's completely synchronous with the main oscillator, which can be locked to the GPS system.
So you, in essence, in one box, have three radios.
That's right. You can go 160 meters through 70 centimeters in a high-performance radio. And then we have many customers, and I'm serious, they come in here and they show us pictures where their entire station is three large monitors with a keyboard. And I've had several have come in and said they're working 160 through 24 gigahertz in one station with three monitors, with no wires running around. Everything is switched, controlled from those monitors.
How does the Flex perform in the field and field day and in MCOM operations?
Well, in fact, we had in Austin, we had it set up we had a Flex 5000C set up in field day in Austin there, and they had it as the go-to station. And with no front-end filters or anything like that, there was no interference from the other stations without any bandpass filters on it. And it was great because we were able to get young people. It was the young people came and sat down because they're comfortable with computer monitors and mice. And so the young people were coming and getting excited about operating the station.
I've seen an inordinate number of young people here at your booth.
Yeah.
What about for QRP fans? Will there be a Flex version coming up?
There absolutely is. This fall, we're coming out with the Flex 1500. It's a 4x6 by 2-inch box that plugs into a USB port of your, you can put in a laptop or whatever. And we'll have two versions. One's a 1 milliwatt version. That's for the guys who want to use it as a transverter IF, or they just want to use it as a receiver. And then we have a 5-watt module that plugs into it as well. And for the transverter guys, we have an external reference input so they can lock it to the GPS system as well.
What will the price point be for that? Have you that
That's will be for the 5-watt model, $579. We haven't priced the 1-watt model yet. The 0 dBm model, but it'll be less than $500.
Well, I'm looking at the league specs comparing the Flex 5000 to the other high-end radios. How does it perform, and what's the price difference?
Okay, the 5000A is $27.99 for the retail price of it, and it will...
Hi there.
How are you?
Good.
So,
go ahead.
We're on an interview, sorry.
That's all right.
Here's something that most people don't understand is that as signals get very large signals are in the same pass band, they mix because of all the analog circuitry, including roofing filters. And this radio does not degrade at any spacing. In other words, at 100 hertz spacing, its performance, intermodulation performance, does not degrade. So the Flex 5000 has right at 100 dB a third-order dynamic range at 100 hertz spacing, at 50 hertz spacing. Now, why do you care? In a contest, those CW stations are not necessarily 2 kilohertz or 5 kilohertz away, are they? They're more like 100 hertz away. And one of our customers, who you know, was talking last night about how he was working 5-watt stations in the ARRL contest that were next to two stations that were only 100 hertz away. And he was working 5-watt stations in Germany between stations, very large signal stations that were plus or minus 100 hertz, and he was working them right in the middle. The other thing that he told me is because we have 100 dB of intermod performance inside the filters, inside the final filter, what that means is you get rid of the inner mod that you makes you tired in a contest.
Right.
The fatigue factor. What he said was is in the previous contest with his previous rig, he was worn out at the end of the contest. He said, this time I had a cup of coffee and stayed up three more hours because I was excited and one worn out. And he won the region. He won the five region. And his contact, he almost doubled the number of contacts this year over the prior year.
So it's a great contesting rig.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, it's different. It's different because it doesn't have 100 knobs on it. It doesn't have 100 knobs. We sell knobs, by the way. We sell a knob. It's just kind of this, like comfort food, And so we sell a knob to go with it. And I can't tell you how many people say, I used it the first day, and once I found out how you tune the radio, he said, I threw the knob over in the drawer and it's never come out. Because what is interesting is that when you can see the signals, it's a 3 dB improvement over just your ear. And what you can do is you can see the signal, click on a CW signal, and it's instantly in the middle of your bandwidth. It may have been 40 kilohertz up the band. You click on it, and it's tuned on your frequency. Try that with a knob. You can't do that.
What's the website?
Website is www.flex.flex. -radio.com.
Very good.
Flexible radios.
Gerald Youngblood, K5SDR, thanks for joining us on
Thank
this
you.
Week on Amateur Radio.
Next up, we walk over to the ICOM booth to talk D-Star as the Hamvention edition of This Week in Amateur Radio continues.
Do you suffer from the heartbreak of brain rot, feeling bored, sluggish, listless, not had a new idea in days, using electronic gizmos without a clue why they work? Now there's help. Ham Radio, guaranteed to stimulate your corroding neurons and open a whole new world of excitement. To learn more about Ham Radio, go to helloradio.org.
Side effects of Ham Radio usage include mental stimulation, desire for education, new career paths, understanding of technology, and cases of addiction have been reported. If you experience any of these symptoms, you're welcome.
Ham Radio, it's not your granddaddy's radio anymore.
You're listening to the 2009 Hamvention edition of This Week in Amateur Radio. I'm Scott Westerman, W9WSW. D-Star is a concept that's been around for a while, but within the last year, the ICOM team has seen the concept of digital audio on the ham bands take off. Eric Meth, VE3EI, joins us at the ICOM booth to refresh us on the basics.
Well, D-Star actually stands for Digital Smart Technology for Amateur Radio. Having said all of that convoluted thing, what is D-Star? It has nothing to do with the constellation in the air. It's basically digital radio for amateur radio. In the late 90s, the JARL developed a protocol for how digital radio will work on the amateur radio bands. They defined what fields in the data stream will work and what won't. Excuse me. They approached all of the Japanese manufacturers to say, okay, we have this new protocol, the world is going digital, we feel that amateur radio should go digital. We would like you guys to build something. The only company that took the challenge was ICOM. ICOM took the challenge and ran with it and developed a line of radios using digital modulation. As a side note, it also spun off a whole digital division of the company from a commercial point of view, which is great for business. Once again, ham radio comes to the rescue of a business. And what we did is we created a radio that occupies a much lower bandwidth than a traditional FM radio. So the big advantage there is with spectrum management, we can now fit three repeaters in the space where we used to have one. But that doesn't matter. Some of the other side benefits are, number one, we have a radio that talks digital. And this has had a fallout because all of a sudden we've started to see a whole new crop of people coming into ham radio because all of a sudden now we have a radio that thinks it's a computer. Now we have all of the younger generation embracing the technology because they've been brought up on computers and now they can integrate computers and radios and we're seeing a resurgence of the young people. In addition, one of the things about D-Star, it's a call sign routed protocol. So it to talk to the end person that you wish to talk to, you dial in their call sign, and assuming they're on the D-Star network, you would call them, and you would cert, it would, the system itself is integrated through the internet, so the end person that you wish to talk to can be called from your radio. So it's a call sign to call sign protocol. And it doesn't mean you could be in New York and the other person could be in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Las Vegas, Calumet, Wisconsin, or any other place where there is a repeater.
Talk about the data transmission capabilities.
Data is on 1.2 gigahertz. It's wider bandwidth because it operates at 128 kilobits per second, or ISDN speeds, at 1.2 gigs. That's one of the about the only bands that we have adequate bandwidth to handle that. And the throughput is pretty good. The throughput actually ends up being about 100 kilobits per second. And it's being used by a number of groups to start to transfer data, particularly in MCOM, emergency communications applications. Because it's 1.2 gig, it's not as popular as 2 meters or VHF, but there's a lot of effort being put into it. And basically, the radio acts like an Ethernet bridge. It's kind of dumb in that way. So it's brought a whole new dimension to ham radio. As a typical example of how it can be used, when it first came out, a group in Vancouver, a gentleman installed a 1.2 gig transceiver in his car. He had it hooked up to a Wi-Fi access point. At the field day site, he took a picture with his wireless phone, which was Wi-Fi enabled. The picture of the field day operation went through the network over D-Star via the ID1 through the gateway onto and was posted on the internet site. So they were able to claim the ARRL field day credit for a public service announcement using amateur radio, and they did it before field day was even over.
We all know that hams don't like change. What is the what do you think will be the appeal that will get more and more people to adopt D-Star?
The applications. What's happened is ICOM brought out the hardware. It's sort of like you come to somebody, you have a solution looking for a problem. Well, since its inception, 95% of the over-the-air applications have been developed by the ham radio community themselves for ham radio using only the ICOM hardware as the only consistent part in it. But the applications have gone from some slow-scan TV transmissions, a lot of MCOM applications. The radios themselves, the voice, the VHF and UHF, are both voice and data radios. So there's a data channel within the voice, plus the voice channel. So they're starting to use a lot of GPS information on the data channel, or they can actually use it similar to what they've been doing with packet radio. They can use keyboard-to-keyboard applications and the voice applications.
And you have your own version of APRS?
Called DPRS. It's Digital Packet Radio Service. Each D-Star gateway has a link to the APRS IS server. So all of the location information, if a user has a GPS attached to their radio, either a portable or a mobile, it's reported to the system and can be found on the Find You site, the same site that's used for APRS, also the Finnish site and so on.
How many repeaters are out there now deployed?
Well, actually, I just checked the stats on that this morning, and there's almost 440 deployed operational throughout the world. Not all repeaters that are out there are connected to the internet. So my estimation is there's probably 150 to 200 not connected to the internet at this point in time. They can be operated in a standalone operation. They don't have to connect to the internet. Or you can have other groups that have private gateways and only four or five systems connected together. So my estimate would be between 440 and 650. The one thing I do know is a few months ago I looked at the number of registered users using this through our gateway system throughout the world, and it was approximately 4,500. And I was telling somebody that earlier this week, and I finally had access to a computer and I looked it up, and lo and behold, we're now up to 8,400, because the growth on this is exponential. And actually on the main website that most of this information can be found is www.dstarusers.org. And that gives you a real-time display of who's on the air, where they are, and a lot of statistics. I got my teeth fixed now. My tongue doesn't work. A lot of statistical information as to what's there. If you'll just allow me for a moment.
Sure.
There's something called Watch Deep Star Grow, and it's a bunch of MRTG maps, and you can see exactly what it is. So this is the number of D-Star users that have been on in the last 24 hours, which is close to 1,600. The worldwide D-Star users in the last 5 minutes, and you can see that the highest one is 104. The number of registered D-Star users, 8,400.
So, and if I have a D-Star radio and I'm not in a D-Star area, is it backward compatible to standard?
Absolutely. It's an FM radio, except what they've done is they've added digital to the FM. Actually, one thing that I do a lot of in my presentations on D-Star is just another modulation scheme. Let's go back in history. We had AM and SSB, and the people on AM said SSB will never replace AM. And actually, there's a whole group of people on 3790 that actually still believe that today. It's never going to replace, SSB is never going to replace AM. And to those people, they're absolutely correct. At this point in time, I can say digital will never replace FM. It'll always be there. However, depending on what happens in the commercial world, as we go forward 25 years from now, it's quite possible that the entire world is going to be digital.
How much does it cost me to get involved in D-Star radio?
Entry level currently this week is around about a $400 point for the portable, $450 for the mobile. Top of the line equipment is close to $1,000 a unit. But by the top of the line unit, I'm talking in terms of a transceiver with a
GPS enabled
and a microphone and the capability of digital. So, something for everyone.
Eric Meth, thanks for joining us on This Week on Amateur Radio.
My pleasure.
D-Star has yet to become popular in the New Mexico section, but ARRL Rocky Mountain Division Director Brian Milishowski and 5ZGT and I talked with two amateurs who hope to bring it to the Roswell area soon. Next on our 2009 Hamvention special, we talk with one of the hobby's youngest proponents, a ham who used weblogs and Twitter to disseminate the Hamvention story in real time around the world. That's in the next segment as This Week in Amateur Radio continues.
Hey, how you doing? This is Joe Walsh. I'm speaking on behalf of Rad. It's okay to rock and roll, right? But don't drive home drunk. If you're drunk, call me up. I have a limo. I'll come and get you.
I'll sleep all day, out all night. I know where you're going. I don't think that's...
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Cool. What is this place?
Okay, Sigmund, set the AE-35 parabolic reflector to coordinates 27025x3950, vector 4.
I have just picked up a vault in the AE-35 unit.
Bummer.
More random access thought repeats, right?
Think of them as select choice encore performances, Marilyn.
Man. What a boatload of flubus.
Stand by. Prepare for interstellar interroster activation.
The amazing world of 75-meter GM. Indeed, that's the subject of the next round of access thought. Coming up in just a few minutes, right here on This Week in Amateur Radio.
I think I'm getting one of my sick headaches.
You're listening to the 2009 Hamvention edition of This Week in Amateur Radio, recorded live at the Hera Arena in Dayton, Ohio. I'm Scott Westerman, W9WSW. In the quarter century since I first earned my license, the average age of radio amateurs has steadily increased to the point where some of us fear that there might not be a critical mass of new hams to continue the legacy. Well, if you've been reading KU0DM's web blog this week, you'll have to agree that there's a contingent of young hams out there who are evangelizing the hobby to a whole new generation. Duncan McLaughlin, youth editor for the American Radio Relay League, joins us to talk about how new media is getting the word out. Duncan, you've been blogging all weekend.
That's correct. I've been blogging from the ARRL, just posting everything as I go. A lot of the sweets I've gotten on there, as well as some of the youth activities. I've also been Twittering, and that's more of instant, hey, there's someone I know, and all that good stuff.
How many followers you have?
We're up to 46 right now. We just signed on a week ago, so 46 in a week was certainly better than my first total.
How long have you been the youth editor for the league?
I've been youth editor for about 6 months. I was awarded the position in November, so yeah, 6 months.
And before that, you've had a lot of experience in the blogosphere. You did some stuff for QRZ?
Yeah, I used to be a moderator for QRZ. I'm actually the founder of the SCED forum and took charge of the youth forum for a while there. I jumped ship a while ago, just started getting too busy with some of the other stuff going on. But I still like to keep in touch with those guys. They're a good group.
How'd you get connected to ham radio in the first place?
I've got a family of 13 hams. My uncle is a ham, and I spend a lot of time with him. And one time we were at a scouting event, and my scoutmaster was working a European DX contest. And he was just knocking down the Europeans every minute or so. And I just thought that was so cool. So we go back, and he gave me a code oscillator, a 1985 handbook, and that was all it took.
So how long have you been licensed?
3 years. 3 years.
How many countries you have?
Worked, 133. I only have 50 confirmed.
So, you know, amateur radio's average age is 55.
I would say 65.
And how do we get it down?
Well, I think the main thing, the problem that hams have had, and I think we'll continue to have, is how can we have the youth identify with ham radio? And the electronics is cool, the meeting new people is cool, but the stereotype of the old man at 2 o'clock in the morning on 75 meters AM is something that's continued to scare away the youth from it. I've been using contesting and DXing as the public relations for all my efforts. I see that as the competitive aspect of it. The adrenaline rush is the exact same adrenaline rush you get in football or sports or debate or any of the other extracurricular activities. It's something that they can identify with and say, hey, I can get the same excitement from ham radio that I do from this other hobby, which I also love.
Why should youth that have Twitter and text messaging and all these other things that vie for their time be interested in a hobby like ours?
Well, it definitely, one way that I've embraced the technology is because I meet people on the air, and then I meet them again on the internet. And then I get to know them better and better. And I find people with similar interests, and I really embrace it. It's really interesting. I've met many people, and I follow them and talk to them daily about the interests. And we meet up on the air. We have roundtables. And it also gives the youth something to look at, to say, hey, this isn't just talking to people, just spending hours on the radio. This is actually really getting to know people that you care about and that do something that you also like. It's sharing an interest.
Well, and you and I were over at the Flex Radio booth a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
How does the interface between the computer and a radio connect with the youth?
Again, it's something that they can identify with. They know computers very well. We're growing up in the age of computers. My 3-year-old cousin can almost use word processing better than I can. We're 2007. And again, it's something that we identify with. We're familiar with it. And especially when you hook up a radio to it and make radio part of the equation, it adds a challenge to computers that isn't there. It gives it an appeal. It's the same as computer gaming. Using something you're familiar with and applying a challenge to it. And SDR radio is the exact same thing.
Duncan McLaughlin, KU0DM, is youth editor at the ARRL. He joins well-known young hams like Andrea Hartledge and some soon-to-be well-known people like Kalamazoo's Simon Bomey in a concerted effort to attract fresh blood with all its energy and enthusiasm to amateur radio. The 2009 Dayton Hamvention is now in the record books. ARRL President Joel Harrison told me that traffic at the league's Hamvention Expo was up over last year. I saw a steady stream of cash changing hands at the Bionics booth, where Bion and his team are selling the latest generation of self-contained APRS gear. lions of our hobby like Bob Heil and Gordon West were in evidence, as were rock stars like Owen and Richard Garriott and the new FCC enforcement officer, Laura Smith. AES, MFJ, Yaesu, Kenwood, and ICOM all had plenty of traffic at their booths, while the old and the new, Vibraplex and Flex Radio, traded customers across the same crowded aisle. And time and again throughout this hamvention, I saw hams greeting hams, old friendships rekindled, and new friendships cemented. We may say that amateur radio is all about emergency preparedness and advancing technology, but at the end of the day, it's moments of fellowship like these that keep us coming back to Dayton year after year. For This Week in Amateur Radio, I'm Scott Westerman, W9WSW.
Man, am I tired. Time for a warm, soothing beverage. Mmm, that's good. Well, let's see what's on This Week in Amateur Radio this lovely Sunday afternoon.
Check out our new Twitter site. Go to www.twitter.com/TWIAR and get up to date on the latest amateur radio news headlines.
Twitter? What the heck is Twitter? I've never heard of any kind of Twitter. What is Twitter? A little bird? Hello?
What? You don't know what Twitter is? Where have you been? Under a rock? It's the latest. It's the greatest. It's fantastic. It's fabulous.
Goodbye, and have a pleasant day.
Check out our new Twitter site. Go to www.twitter.com/TWIAR and get up to date on the latest amateur radio news headlines. My dad is at /N2SNH. Greg Williams is at /K4HSM. And our executive producer, George, at /W2XBS. But check out the main site at Twitter to go backstage at This Week in Amateur Radio right now.
With his segment on working amateur radio satellites, here is AMSAT North America's own Bruce Page, KK5DO.
Drew, KO4MA, AMSAT North America Vice President of Operations, advises us that the AO51 repeater has been reloaded and is up and open for use. User access to the BBS is not set up, but will soon be configured. If you hear WA6FWF or WA4SXM on the air, give them a big thank you for getting AO51 back on the air as soon as possible. You can now listen to the Houston AMSAT Net every week on Echolink. It can be found in the conference *AMSAT* at 8 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. That's 0100 UTC on Wednesday. On May 19, there was a successful Minotaur 1 launch. On board were several satellites. Pharmasat has been heard on 437.465 MHz. It is possible that Hawksat was also heard on 437.345 MHz. CP6's CW has been heard. There have been no reports on AeroCube 3. This is Bruce Page, KK5DO.
From the United States of America, you're listening to Amateur Radio's premier news magazine of the air, This Week in Amateur Radio International.
You think you know what radio is, but there is a radio you may not have yet discovered. Amateur radio, or as it is often called, ham radio. You can talk to the world.
Hey, Yoshi, you're my first contact with Japan.
Help when disasters strike.
The Hurricane Emergency Net is now open for priority traffic.
Or make friends worlds away.
G'day, mate. Beautiful day here out in Australia. I tell you what, the waves are
beautiful. Say hello to the world via amateur radio. The ARRL, the National Organization for Amateur Radio, can teach you how. Visit HelloRadio.org and say hello to Ham Radio.
We now pause 10 seconds for station identification.
Thanks for singing our song as you're driving along. Always keep it here at WBCQ. We're here for you.
And now that you put up with all that, here's a cookie.
It's This Week in Amateur Radio International. And I'm Scott Westerman, W9WSW. 1966 was a banner year for this Cleveland, Ohio rock band. They called themselves the Outsiders, and this was their only top five hit.
Completely different.
Connecting to the Random Access Thought.
Cool. What is this place?
Okay, Sigmund, set the AE-35 parabolic reflector to coordinates 27025 by 3950, vector 4.
I have just picked up a fault in the AE-35 unit.
Bummer.
More random access thought repeats, right?
Think of them as select choice encore performances, Marilyn.
Man. What a boatload of flubus.
Stand by. Prepare for interstellar interroster activation.
The following program was recorded on 16mm black and white motion picture film.
Because this presentation is being played over the radio, the ability to view the image content of this film may be severely compromised. Oh, hello there. The English language is a remarkable and very flexible device for use in everyday communications, and like all languages, is subject to change and considerable modification based on such factors as enunciation, pronunciation, geographic accent, dialect, and overall articulation. Anyone who has traveled from the Mideast USA to a place like New York City may find themselves confronted with seemingly bizarre contortions in the very way common words are spoken. And a city like New York plays host to an amazing array of additional foreign vocabularies merged into the local vernacular. Many European words and phrases from the German, the Spanish, the Yiddish, and the Italian languages, along with more from the Middle and Far East, have certainly kept the typical out-of-towner perplexed until certain linguistic elements have been cracked, either through purchased language dictionaries or with a little help from an in-the-know friend. Government legalese, sports lingo, computer jargon, even the esoterica of amateur radio offers many seemingly alien words and terms. A simple phrase like CQ, meaning calling any station, or 73, suggesting best regards, or QSL, referring to a verification of a signal heard, is nonetheless confusing to the uninitiated. Where the spoken word does take a remarkable turn is in the world of amateur radio amplitude modulation. AM phone was once the staple of voice communications for many years prior to the introduction of single sideband and is still regarded as a true high-fidelity medium by a small but dedicated, almost religious following. The home base frequency for amateur radio AM, or YAM, is on or about 3885 kHz. As an example of what you might hear on 75 meters YAM, here is a clip of the Timtron, WA1HLR, said to be the father of the language of YAM.
I play around with the voltages a bit. I massaged around the screen voltage and the bias. You know, it's real simple. If you have your usual Junkston Valiant or Ranger or what have you, pluck that in the socket and put the band switch in the 15-meter mode, tune it up, bingo, you're on 18.150, ready to rock and roll on good old YAM, much to the chagrin of a few of the slump rocketeers.
Here, the term bias would seem to have an intentionally misplaced accent, while the reference to Junkston Valiant appears to be a spelling distortion and perhaps a personal critique of the vintage 1950s Johnson Valiant amateur AM transceiver, a classic boat anchor once commonly seen at regional hamfests everywhere. But there is more. The AM lexicon offers extensive content and much in the way of verbal color. Let's take a look at just a few of these
for our own personal edification.
First, a simple noun, crapstone. Crapstone is a variant of crystal, a minute chunk of quartz that oscillates at a specific frequency when current is applied. To drain the log is to void the bladder, and by extension, the LDS or log draining station would be your basic bathroom. This is just one of a multitude of scatological references, not unlike feces. Feces is a less than flattering handle for the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. How about JN? JN is an abbreviation for Johnny Novice and may be used to describe any newcomer to the AM experience, but a JN can also refer to a youngster lacking knowledge or experience. JS. JS equals jockstrap. To JS is to cobjob or temporarily secure a device, which in itself often becomes a permanent installation. You might say something like, just JS that coass to the antenna mast. and COAS itself a corruption of coax, which is short for coaxial cable. Microphonium and telephonium are obvious, and one might suppose that by extension, telescopium and microscopium might apply as well. Old Buzzard may seem self-explanatory, but we are advised that being an old buzzard may be less related to physical age, but more akin to a state of mind. Old buzzard transmissions are long transmissions, frequently accompanied by on-the-air tuning of the transmitter, along with incessant ramblings about one's physical hygiene or health status. But here's another. Olean. Olean is a switch word for fuel. Variants of olean include woodolean and pissolean, and while woodolean may be useful in your wood stove, it is not entirely clear how or where pissolean might be employed or subsequently deployed. Then there is to piss and moan. Pissing and moaning is a mode of conversation often engaged by old buzzards. A gaggle of old buzzards may convene on the air in a piss and moan net, and some may actually be piss weak. Certainly a more colorful way of saying they are running QRP or running low power. But if your 75-meter YAM transmitter is running full bore, then it might be said that it has sprout. Consult your Gray's Anatomy for additional definition on this remarkable bit of amateur radio vernacular. And it's a fair bet that if your rig has sprout, then it also has strapping audio. If your audio is strapping with full, high-fidelity YAM modulation, then chances are the slop bucket stations on adjacent frequencies will be blown away. Slop bucket is synonymous with single sideband. In fact, the slop bucketeers may get so upset, they might become yellowfied. By contrast, a YAMer with a poor-sounding radio with low audio response and a lot of hum and distortion is yellowy. The rig will certainly need to be de-yellowfied for things to improve. Proper names, such as cities and states, are not exempt from this tang-tongling scenario. A city like Buffalo becomes Buffoonalo. Philadelphia transitions to Filthadelphia, while Pittsburgh changes to, what else, Pittsburgh. Rochester switches to Rottenchester, and Syracuse splits into Sorry Excuse. Should you be on vacation from the Waste Coast, you might want to visit friends in Vermont and New Hampshire. But in the end, the key to this arcane speech is not in just using the words, but in saying them in the way they were truly meant to be said. Your classroom can be found on or about 3885 kilohertz most evenings, and your assignment is to listen and to hone your new tongue so by the time you get your own strapping YAM rig on the air, you will no longer be a Johnny Novice.
Disconnecting from the Random Access Thought.
The Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Enhancement Act of 2009 needs your help. The ARRL is asking its membership to contact their members of the U.S. House of Representatives with a request to become co-sponsors of this significant piece of legislation known as Bill H.R. 2160. ARRL Regulatory Information Manager Dan Henderson, N1ND, tells us, "Getting a bill successfully through Congress is a formidable task, one that is going to require the involvement of every ARRL member." He adds, "Working with our Washington consulting firm, Schwat & Company, we are laying a dynamic approach that will allow us to make our case most effectively. We have developed a strategy to maximize our impact when dealing with each member of Congress. Using normal U.S. mail is no longer an effective method of letting Congress hear your voice. Since the anthrax scare that followed the 9/11 attacks, all incoming mail to Congress is delayed anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks while it is screened. While email is convenient, it is also not effective due to the large volume of email that each congressional office receives. Henderson tells us, to ensure that ARRL members' letters are quickly and expediently received by Congress, our strategy is to ask ARRL members send their letters directly to Chwat & Company. Chwat's staff will sort the letters by congressional district and hand-deliver them to the appropriate House offices, providing a direct point of contact with the congressmen and their staff. This personal contact gives us the chance to provide not only letters from constituents, but information from the ARRL on why this legislation is important. The ARRL has provided a sample letter for league members to personalize and send to their congressional representative. Henderson explained, personalized letters make a better impression than a standard form letter or petition. You can find the name and address for your member of Congress on the ARRL Members Only webpage. Once it has been personalized, ARRL members should send their letter to Chwat & Company using one of three methods: as a signed attachment to an email to ARRL at chwatco.com, as a signed fax to 703-684-7594, as a regular letter to John Chwat, Chwat & Company, 625 Slater's Lane, Suite 103, Alexandria, Virginia, 22314. If you choose to email your letter, please send it as an attachment to the email instead of having it as part of the text of the email message itself. This allows the letter to be easily printed and delivered. Should you decide to draft your own letter supporting H.R. 2160 instead of editing the sample, Henderson asked that you please remember a few things. Identify the bill by number and title. H.R. 2160, the Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Enhancement Act of 2009. Keep the letter brief and on topic, one page at the most. Ask your congressional representative to consider becoming a co-sponsor. Thank them for their consideration. Simple is better when making this kind of request to a representative. Congressmen and their staff are looking to gauge interest and support for the bill. A lengthy letter that strays off topic can detract from the focus of asking for support for the legislation. Should you decide not to send your letter to Chwat & Company, but directly to your representative, it is still important to send a copy of your correspondence to Chwat & Company. This allows Chwat to discuss accurately with the congressman and their staff the amount of support for the bill in each individual district. There is strength in numbers, Henderson added. Aside from bill sponsor representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas, the ARRL is fortunate to already have six additional members of Congress who have signed on as co-sponsors of H.R. 2160. Madeline Bordalo of Guam, Brett Guthrie of Kentucky, Mary Jo Kilroy of Ohio, Zoe Lofgren of California, Blaine Lutkemeyer of Missouri, and Benny Thompson of Mississippi. Henderson stated, "We congratulate ARRL Great Lakes Division Director Jim Weaver, K8JE, and his grassroots legislative action team in Kentucky for securing the support of Representative Guthrie, the first new co-sponsor of the bill," adding, "It shows that our grassroots effort can work." You may be asking yourself, what should I do if my representative has already signed on as a co-sponsor of H.R. 2160? The answer is simple. Thank them for their support. If your congressman is one of those listed as a co-sponsor, please send them a letter thanking them for their support. Use the same contact information for Chwat & Company. It is important to convey your appreciation to your representative when they sign on as a co-sponsor or support the bill. Henderson explained, that simple thank you may help open the door the next time their help is needed. Once you have prepared and sent your letter supporting H.R. 2160, your job is not over. Feedback is an important part of the process. Henderson noted, what your congressman has to say in regards to your contact can provide the ARRL with important information as we try to push our bill forward. This feedback can possibly help us identify potential new support for the bill or a weakness in the legislation we may need to address. When you receive a response from your congressman, please forward a copy to the Regulatory Information Office at ARRL headquarters via email or hard copy to Regulatory Information, ARRL, 225 Main Street, Newington, Connecticut, 06111. Henderson summarized, H.R. 2160 presents the amateur radio service with a unique opportunity, but also carries with it the important responsibility of making your voice heard. H.R. 2160 stands as the first step in trying to address the long-standing problem of extending the protections afforded amateur radio operators under PRB 1 to deed restrictions and covenants. To be clear, passing H.R. 2160 is not going to achieve that goal right away, but it will help lay the groundwork by assessing the impact such restrictions have on our ability to train for and respond to disasters and other emergencies. Reporting for This Week in Amateur Radio, I'm Wayne Nelms, N4DCL.
Bummer.
Sigmund, what's going on?
I can't download the This Week in Amateur Radio podcast on my brand new Sony PSP.
Why not?
The websites that have it are just too bloated. It takes forever for the pages to load, and there are too many pop-ups.
There is a better way.
Clue me in, sister of mine.
Go to kxkvi.blogspot.com. The latest This Week podcasts are there, and nothing more.
Cool. That did the trick. Thanks.
The KXKVI podcast download portal for wireless devices. Get the latest This Week downloads fast, easy, and anytime you want. That's kxkvi.blogspot.com. Another special feature from This Week in Amateur Radio.
And finally this week, the story of a tower that needed a new home, but no way to get it there. Well, no way until a couple of hams came along. An amateur radio tower stood in the backyard of a suburban home long after the resident radio amateur became a silent key. His widow wanted it removed, but with house extensions over the years, it seemed to be a very expensive proposition indeed. It could be lifted out by a crane that would require the cutting of power lines, permits, insurance, and other hassles, or maybe a helicopter was an option. Either way, it was going to be far too costly. Along came a couple of radio amateurs who used their ingenuity to solve the problem. The tower was put on the ground, fitted with brackets onto which were mounted empty 44-gallon drums, through an opening in the rear fence, and then slid into a creek. Just like Davy Crockett and Daniel Boone, the radio amateurs paddled the floating tower downstream to a location accessible by a vehicle and loaded it onto a trailer. A win-win situation for the widow, who was pleased to see the tower gone, and for a ham who acquired it for transplanting it to a new location. The bottom line of all this? It's simple. When you have a problem that seems insurmountable, simply call a ham.